Second study, we had just done A, talking about the different names folks that believe Baptist doctrine were called by. Okay. And so we're ready for B, Clarence Larkin. Clarence Larkin is most remembered for his prophecy studies and his prophecy charts and outlining things to come and so forth, but he was also a historian, and he wrote about Baptist history. And this is a statement of his that helps put this in perspective, I believe. Clarence Larkin describes the heritage of the Baptist. The Baptist claim to have descended from the apostles. It's true the line of descent cannot always be traced. That is the difference between me and folks who are called successionists. They say your church is only a Baptist church if it's started by a Baptist church that can trace it was started by a Baptist. Well, you can't trace the line. It may be there, but you have to understand Baptists were often under persecution. People under persecution do not leave a record. Okay? For obvious reasons. Going to Vietnam, spent a week in Vietnam some years back, 2001 actually, taught a Baptist history class, this class, these notes to a group of Vietnamese Baptist preachers. I came home and ran into some folks who were raising money to build a church building in Vietnam. I immediately became suspicious. These folks, pastors, would change their location every service. Because if you didn't, they would come get you. The last thing they wanted was a building. They surely didn't want a sign. The sign would be like saying, come here, get us. This is where we're at. See, in persecuted areas and persecuted times, you don't write books and publish them. You don't put addresses on anything. Okay? And so consequently, there are just periods of time where the information is just not there for obvious reasons. Mentioned last hour, spent time on the phone with friends of mine in the Middle East yesterday. And they, in the middle of the Syrian civil war, are having their church services in a different location every service. The last thing they're going to do is write up a history of what they're doing. The last thing they're going to do is say, this is where we will be Sunday, and give that to the general public, because they know what happens if you do. They're really being targeted by the rebels in Syria. If they were to pass out a flyer to the general public that says we're having Baptist church service here in this person's house on Sunday morning at such a time, they would be bombed. They're not leaving any written record. So you just don't always have a record of people that believe these things for a reason. Sometimes they're trying to hide where they're at, not tell you about where they're at. So I wouldn't be surprised if it's true that this church was started by this church, was started by this church, was started by this church. It goes all the way back to the apostles. But you don't have the record of it. You just don't. If you did, somebody would publish it. And we'd be using that and going through it. Okay? The Baptists claim to have descended from the apostles. It's true the line of descent cannot always be traced. Like a river that now and then in its course is lost under the surface of the ground and then makes its appearance again. The Baptists claim that from the days of the apostles until the present time, they have not been wanting those persons, either separately or collected into churches, and known under different names, who, if now living, would be universally recognized as Baptists. And we have an example of a river like that just over in Indiana, Blue River. Famous Bears of Blue River stories. And the river goes along for a while. You can canoe it or whatever. I've done it several times. Then it goes underground. You can actually get a go and their boat trips underground. You can pay to ride the boat, and they'll take you on the Blue River under the ground. And then it comes back up. And then it goes on for what? Goes back underneath. You know it's there because it resurfaces. So even when you can't see it, you know it's there because it goes under, resurfaces, and it goes back under, and it resurfaces. And because it resurfaces, you know it's there when you can't see it. History of true New Testament churches is much the same way. It keeps resurfacing. Because it's resurfacing, you know it was there, even though you don't know any of the details about where it was at a particularly given moment. Continuing with his book, from his book, Why I'm a Baptist. Since the origin of Baptists, long and eventful ages have elapsed. Some of them were ages of ignorance and darkness. Men were afraid to speak or write, almost to think. The principles The principles for which the Baptists contended were fiercely denounced as heresy and treason. The principles for which the Baptists contended were fiercely denounced as heresy and treason. To speak was to be hushed in death. So it's no wonder you didn't have a very good church history record at times. When I was in Vietnam, and again, let me say, these folks, I've been to Vietnam and Syria, these folks do things every day that we would consider heroic if we did them once. Having been with them and done some of the things once, I understand that. But, they do this stuff every day. And I'm in Syria, and we have a meeting. It's the preacher who I've gone over there to be with, and his son, who was a college student of mine when I was college president in Florida, and 12 underground pastors. They're having a meeting in a living room. And I'm invited to be there. They're having a discussion. They want me to speak at the end of the discussion. Here's the discussion. They're all taking it for granted they're going to be killed for their faith. That's just a given. What's the most effective way? Do we all come out in public at the same time and all die at the same time in order to get the attention of the widest possible audience? Or one at a time? So there's always somebody left to minister to the believers. That's the debate they're having. Not whether they're going to die, it's how do we do this most effectively? And at the end of this debate, they want me to speak to them. We get to the end of the debate and they said, you don't need to hear anything from somebody like me. I mean, you know more about this than all the preachers in America put together. And I didn't offer them any advice. In fact, I was humbled to be in their presence. That is how most of our forefathers have lived. I'm in Vietnam. In Vietnam, I went in a tourist visa. And, of course, you're not supposed to, you know, have anything like this. So they actually having a Baptist history class in an old Chinese hotel in downtown Saigon. And it's a hotel that caters to illegal activities. On the first floor where we're at, there is a Seventh-day Adventist class, our class, a brothel, and a drug den. And we all have in common that what we're doing is illegal. And this place caters to illegal activities. And, of course, one of the fears, if somebody comes after any one of the things, they might catch the others. So here's I'm staying at a hotel that foreigners normally stay in. It's a nice hotel. And they say, here's what you do to get to the class. There's always taxis outside. You get a taxi. You take a taxi to the mall. There's a mall that caters foreign things, you know. Take a taxi to the mall. When you get to the mall, you walk around a certain number of minutes. If nobody says anything to you, there are always taxis outside the mall. You get a taxi outside the mall, take that taxi to a fire station. There are always taxis outside the fire station. Outside the fire station, you get another taxi, and you take it to where the meeting is. Three stages. I didn't know it, but there's somebody following me on a motorbike all the way to see if I'm being followed. And they told me, said, when you go there, the first couple days, you're just going to tourist places because they always follow you for a couple days. I checked in the hotel. They said, you do understand we have to alert the government to the fact you're staying here. Your room number and everything. So I go sightseeing for a couple days, and then they decide they're ready to start the class. So I follow the instructions. I go, it's first class, first morning. Same class, same notes that you guys have. Whole thing, translated Vietnamese. And they say, now, please understand this. It says, if somebody tells us to scatter, we do not stop and discuss it. We don't ask why. But somebody tells you to scatter, immediately you block, and I can't remember exactly how I was, but it's like you walk 6 blocks south and 3 blocks west and stand on that corner. And I kept repeating it to myself, I'm going to get it wrong. I'm going to be standing on a corner in Saigon and nobody in the world is going to know where I'm at. Turns out, I found out later, there was a Kentucky colonel on that corner, and it was not uncommon for Americans to be seen there, so
You could sort of blend in. And but I came six blocks south, 3 blocks west. I said, I'm going to get it wrong and go 6 blocks west and 3 blocks south, and I'm going to be lost, and nobody's ever going to find me, and I'm going to be stuck in Vietnam forever. Okay. They live with this all the time. I go to the mall, and one morning, this girl bumps into me. I find out later she's a 16-year-old daughter of a pastor. She bumps into me, hands me a note, and goes off. Go into men's bathroom. So I'm looking at the note. It says, you're being followed. Go shopping for an hour. And then walk around again. This pastor's daughter was putting herself on the line as part of this process. 16-year-old girl. I'm sure they thought she would look the least suspicious. So I go shopping. Buy stuff I don't want. Because folks are apparently following me to see whether I'm shopping or not. And so I got to buy something. And that really ruins your focus on finding something you're really interested in. The fact you have to buy something. So I go buy stuff I don't really want. I remember I bought my son some expensive chess set and stuff that I would not normally have gotten. But anyway, I'm just getting stuff. And then I walk around again and nobody says anything. So I go out and get a taxi to go to the fire station, to get another taxi to go to the class at the hotel. Okay. I said all that to say this. How much history do you think there is that they have written down of what they're doing? None. Because if you wrote it down, what might happen? Somebody might find it. If they found it. I mean, this was one moving moment because they have the pastors and they invite the widows of pastors. Widows of pastors who've been martyred, were killed for the faith. So there's 6 widows there, as well as 30-some preachers. And so at some point, they're having the widows give their testimony. One woman was telling me the day that Saigon fell to the communist. Everybody's trying to figure out what to do. Her husband said, I'm going to go stand at the church. I'm not going to let them see any fear in me. He said, I'm just going to stand at the church door. She never saw him again. In fact, they were excited because at that moment, and I've heard that it is better there. This was 2001. But at that moment, none of their men had been killed in 8 years. And that was the longest time frame they'd had without somebody in the group being executed. Okay. There are folks that have lived this throughout the centuries. And folks sometimes pick at them because they don't get this little thing right or that little thing right. I say, go try and live. Most of our folks couldn't live a day the way they live. Okay. But they didn't. They don't leave much history. And that's the way it has been for centuries. There'd be periods of time when folks could come out in the open and we got a record. And then there's persecution and they go underground. And we don't have a record. And then a better day comes and they come out in the open again. And we have history. And then persecution comes again and they go back underground. And we don't have much record. I think we'll be utterly amazed one day to find out all that's been done for the Lord over the centuries that we don't know anything about. People tell me that have researched this. They believe there's over 1 million independent Baptists in mainland China today. It's just that you occasionally now, because of the internet, get a little word or a little word of that, a little word there. But hey, there's at least 1 million independent Baptists in China. Who would have guessed? And that those churches go back to churches that go back to churches that go back to churches that existed before communism. And we don't have much of their story. We're going to be fascinating to find out one day what all God did. Meet a bunch of Chinese folks in heaven that we didn't even know were Christians. But God did a work there because His Word is not bound. Okay? But this is why Baptist people said, well, you folks that claim Baptist history, your history is spotty. Yeah, it really is. That's because folks like them were killing our forefathers. And so consequently, they weren't always out in the open about everything they were doing. And those are just realities. I will this year make a couple of trips to the Mideast. And
we're going to be secretive enough about that. No one is going to know where I'm going till I get back. When I get back, it'll be okay to tell, because you never go to the same place twice. Okay? But I'm going to go. I've explained to my family. I've explained to the church, my staff, twice, if things go as planned in this next year, I will disappear. I'll just, you drive me to the airport, and that's that, and I'll tell you all about it when I get back. These folks live differently than we imagine living. And anyway, man, the principles for which the Baptists contended were fiercely denounced as heresy and treason. To speak was to be hushed in death. Had they not been immortal, all vestiges of them, saving the records of courts and councils, would have perished. Their existence and continuity can be traced down the ages by the stains of their martyrs' blood, the stains of their martyrs' blood, and the light of their martyrs' fires. Stains of their martyrs' blood, and the light of their martyrs' fires. I have a little book on Baptist history. And there's a lot of it parallels the class here, though there are some things in a book that are not here, and there's some things in the notes that are not in the book. But my concept was, one of my concepts in a book was to show how widespread this was. And it's not just one or two groups. And as I dug and dug, I found references to groups that we know nothing about, but somebody criticizing them for being Baptist. And we don't know anything about them. There's a fellow named Berengarius that one of the popes criticized. He said Berengarius had organized churches in that region that had over 800,000 people in them. Only thing we know about him is that a pope called him Baptist. That's the only thing we know. And said he had 800,000 people in the churches. Wouldn't that be a story if we knew something more about it? And I hate to have to trust a pope, but in this case, I'm hoping what he says was the truth. That there was somebody there preaching this. And that there were 800,000 people that got a hold of these truths in one region. Since the days of the apostles, they have come to surface in the Novatians, the Donatists, the Paulicians, the Paternes, the various communities of Waldenses, the so-called Anabaptists of Germany, the Mennonites or Dutch Baptists, the Baptists of England, and are seen today in the Baptists distributed all over the world. Because of the internet, and in some countries the internet is more regulated than others, but because of the internet, I have heard from Baptist preachers in places I never dreamed there would be a Baptist preacher. Roman number 3. Baptists are distinct from all other groups which profess Christianity. And we'll start this. I don't know if we'll get done with this today. We may not get done till tomorrow, but this is important to put things in perspective. And sometimes when people are born into a Baptist family, and they grow up in a Baptist church, they think everybody else in every other group is somewhat similar to us in what we believe and what we do. And that is not the case. And I have found this. Folks that get saved after they're teenagers or grown often understand this better than folks that whose parents were in a good church and they grew up in a good church and they don't even remember what it's like not to be in a good church. They just think that what they're getting is what everybody gets. And sometimes they're really naive in terms of what is out there. Well, following is a contrast to Baptists with other groups. A, modernism. Modernism is a movement which denies the complete inspiration of Scripture. Denies the complete inspiration of Scripture. And this denies any special role as a spiritual authority for the Bible. Any special role as a spiritual authority for the Bible. Modernists usually deny the deity of Christ, personal salvation, and the basic Christian truths. Modernists usually deny the deity of Christ, personal salvation, and the basic Christian truths. They may occasionally hold on to one or more of the Baptist distinctives, but only because they're impressed with the logic of such a position and not because it's taught in the Bible. I mentioned yesterday going to American Baptist Convention, which is modernist, the most modernist group of Baptists there is, going to their headquarters in Pennsylvania during the tour through all of it. And they have a section, a room on religious liberty and how important religious liberty is. Well, amen. I'm with them 100%. I'm glad they do that. But you go from display to display to display in the room, and I notice something. There's no mention of the Bible or anything taught in the Bible in that whole room devoted to religious liberty. It's all about the logic of religious liberty. It doesn't have anything to do with the fact it's taught in the Bible. Fortunately, modernism has penetrated many religious movements. It's taught under many names. They even deny many modernist. There are even many modernist churches which use the name Baptist, even though they deny all the basics of Baptist doctrine and history. Had a lady in Chicago that got saved watching Charles Stanley broadcast on television. And she knew Charles Stanley was a Baptist, so she figured she should go to a Baptist church. So she just went to the Baptist church closest to her house. She didn't know the difference between American Baptist Convention and the kind of Baptist, but American Baptist Convention churches are modernist. The pastors are modernist. So she just goes to a Baptist church on Sunday morning. She got saved during the week, goes to a Baptist church, and the sermon that morning is preached by a gay Baptist preacher on the importance of legalizing gay marriage. That was the Sunday morning service. And she walked out saying, there's something wrong with this. You know, missed something somewhere. So she started calling folks on the phone and finally called me. But I mean, there are modernist Baptists everywhere. Very sadly, the oldest Baptist church in the United States is modernist today. That's been a relatively recent development, I think, that it went that way. It was a fundamental church for over 300 years, but is modernist today. The Ravenswood is 123 years old. So is Maplewood Baptist. We're the only two independent Baptist churches. There's some missions. We're the only two independent Baptist churches on the northern side of Chicago that are not modernist. And we both started in the same year and both left the American Baptist Convention in 1934. And that is why they're not modernist churches, because they left the convention. That was the early days of the modernist fundamentalist battles that we'll get to towards the end of the class. And but I mean, that's real, and it's all over the place. That is why a lot of folks have, in order to distinguish, they'll say independent fundamental Baptist, because that is a group. I've never seen an independent Baptist church that was modernist. I believe churches go modernist because of politics, and if you're not in any human organization, you don't have any politics to pull you. But you have to be careful with the terminology. The Southern Baptist Convention is a mixed bag. There are modernist churches and non-modernist churches in the convention. The Black Baptist conventions, there are four at least, are mixed bags. Some of those churches are modernist and some of them aren't. And so you can't just say independent fundamental Baptist churches or Bible-believing churches and every other Baptist is a modernist. You can't say that. It doesn't hold up under scrutiny. I'm very comfortable saying American Baptist Convention churches are modernist. I'm very comfortable saying independent Baptist churches aren't. It's really a mixed story on some of these others. And so you just have to be careful in terms of being accurate. But I will say this. The conventions, all the conventions have some modernistic influence in them. I'm very comfortable saying that. Southern Baptist Convention is not as modernistic as it was 20 years ago. There have been some steps taken to make some of what they do better. And credit where credit's due. But they never got the modernism out of their colleges. Their colleges are a mess. They're independent. And I know Southern Baptist preachers who tell the young men in their colleges, young ladies in their colleges, don't ever go to a Southern Baptist college. You know, go somewhere else. Do something different. I was just teaching in just a couple weeks ago, in Independent Baptist College and good school, and where Camille was previous years, and They got a new student there this year who came from a Southern Baptist church. I mean, his mind is spinning. And I hope he's going to see it through and get it all. But his mind is just spinning. This is so different than everything he learned. And I went through that when I was at Landmark. Every now and then students would come in from a Southern Baptist church, and some of them came in from churches that wasn't that dramatically different. But some of them came in, and it was like they didn't know there were people who believed these things. It's just night and day type difference. So the fact Baptist is on the name of the church by itself doesn't mean anything. You have to know a little bit more than that.
But in every group, they're modernists. Okay? That's why it's become difficult to say what Methodists believe, what Presbyterians believe, what Baptists believe, because under every one of those names, there are some churches that are modernists. They don't believe anything about what historic Methodism believes. When the second church I pastored, there was a man who came by often. He was United Methodist. He'd been born in the same United Methodist church, baptized as a baby. He was 72, and he'd been in that church. He'd been a member of that church his entire life. Okay, I think he kept saying since he was 4 days old, he'd been a member of that church. And he wasn't going to leave that church for anything. But he is saved, I'm sure, in a day when it was more likely the gospel be taught in a Methodist church. He probably saved as a child a long time back. But the denomination had just sent a homosexual preacher to that church. And he's appalled. So he's constantly looking for material against homosexuality. And I'd provided him with some things. Because he's going in on Sunday morning, giving everybody material to show how bad homosexuality is while they're gathering to hear the morning sermon from their homosexual pastor. So I asked him, you know, the inevitable question, why do you stay? He said, that's my church. I said, have you got a hold of the denominational headquarters and protested? He said, well, I did, but they didn't listen because they assign the pastor to the church. The church has no say about it. So they'd put this homosexual pastor out in an old-time country Methodist church. And at least one church member wasn't happy, but he couldn't do anything about it. Modernism shows up everywhere. Roman Catholicism is our next look. Roman Catholicism is the world's largest denomination that is Christian in name. Roman Catholics claim an unbroken line of church succession back to the Apostle Peter, whom they promote as the first pope. In reality, the modern Roman Catholic structure can only be traced as far back as the 5th century. Roman Catholicism is in many ways the complete opposite of the Baptist faith. Let's go back to page four, in your numbering, or my numbering. Let's look at the Baptist distinctives again and compare the Baptist distinctives to Roman Catholicism. Okay. Again, we deal all the time with people saved out of Roman Catholicism. This stuff is not stuff they grew up knowing. Some of you probably grew up knowing it. Okay. I imagine this is the only thing Brian's ever been taught in his religious life. First Baptist thing, the Bible is the sole authority for faith and practice. According to Roman Catholicism, what's the authority? Well, they think the Bible is a authority. What else is an authority? The priest, College of Cardinals, church tradition, the church fathers, and the ultimate authority is the Pope. So they're just at the other end of thinking. Independent, autonomous churches. Again, Roman Catholicism is at the other end. Every Catholic church is the member of a worldwide system that has churches everywhere, but they're all in one system. It's the ultimate opposite of an independent church. There have been, in the United States in recent years, some Catholic churches that have tried to leave Catholicism and become independent Catholics. There have been various levels of legal battles and all that. I don't know where all that ends up, but it's just been an unheard of thing. Regenerated church membership. When do you become member of a Catholic church? How do most people become members of a Catholic church? Baptized as a baby. Camille, were your folks ever Catholic? Yeah.
I know many people in the Philippines, that were baptized as Catholics and reached for the Lord at some point. We just, right now, working with a couple that came to the United States a few months ago, and a man got saved right before he came here in a Baptist church, Philippines, but his wife didn't. And so this is all, and she's coming to church with him, and I'm glad she's there, but I mean, this is all brand new to her. None of this fits for her. Baptism by immersion of believers only. They have baptism by sprinkling, normally of children. Only if an adult converts to Catholicism, they'll sprinkle you. Lord's Supper is not an ordinance for them, it's a sacrament. It's part of what you do to stay saved. Priesthood of all believers? Quite the contrary. They have certain people designated as priests. Separation of church and state? Well, they've run whole countries in past history. They tend to believe in separation of church and state today, now that they're not powerful enough to run countries. They're in favor of separation of church and state. But back when they could, they did. And they'll still make deals. For example, in Vietnam, the Catholic Church and the Buddhist religion have a deal with the government to be recognized. So Catholicism and Buddhism is not harassed. They have a deal with the communist government. And the preachers there were telling me, he said the communist officials are too lazy, usually too lazy to look for them. He said, do you know where they get caught? Catholic priest or Buddhist priest turns them in, finds out about them and turns them in because they don't want the competition. He said, normally the communist officials, they really don't care. And said, most of them are lazy and they just take their salary and don't do any more than they have to, so they're not out looking for you. Unless the Catholic priest says, I lost two people. Two people got saved. And they don't come to the Catholic Church anymore. They're over here meeting with these Baptists in this spot. So that's when they get in trouble. Well, all right, back to our comparison with the various groups. Roman Catholicism denies salvation by faith and insists upon salvation by works and penance. By the grace of God, just Sunday afternoon, we had somebody saved, who's a Catholic, who's come to our church on a number of occasions, and finally got it. And those were his words. He said, I've been taught and taught and taught salvation was by works. And he finally got it. Salvation insists on salvation by works and penance. They present church tradition, the authority of the Pope and the church, councils as equal with Scripture. They deny salvation by faith. They insist upon salvation by works and penance. They present church tradition, the authority of the Pope and church councils, as equal with Scripture, as a spiritual authority. Their churches are in no way independent, but under the control of a worldwide ecclesiastical system. A worldwide ecclesiastical system. There is in Chicago a Catholic priest that preaches salvation by faith. I was shocked when I heard that. Brother Engel and I took him out to eat and questioned him, and sure enough, he teaches salvation by faith. And he's officially a Catholic priest supported by the denomination, but they will not allow him to pastor a church. He just sort of, at large, they don't even pay attention to what he does, but they will not allow him to pastor a church. And ironically, he doesn't speak in Catholic churches because he doesn't get any invitations. He is doing some speaking in evangelical churches. But we sat and talked with him about all that, and he said, well, they just don't know what to do with me. Okay. It's not their doctrine. Okay. It's interesting to me, and I've seen this in our church where 50% of the people are former Catholic. There's two reactions to Catholicism among these folks who are former Catholic. Catholic Church does teach that Jesus was God, that he came to this earth, that he died for men's sin. Now, they don't explain it right. They don't explain what trusting him means. So some of these folks, when you dealt with them, it was like the Catholic Church had gotten them close. And we gave them the rest of the information. They got over the line. And so they're saved, and they're still grateful for the part that got them close. Others are just angry that they were in that church for so many years and never heard how to be saved. And so the reaction of people is different from person to person, even though it's the same situation. Well, not holding to a belief in personal salvation by faith, they have no concept of a regenerated church membership. You become a member of the Roman Catholic Church by being born into it. By being born into it. Or by expressing your allegiance to the church. By expressing your allegiance to the church. Actually, the Catholic priest that preaches salvation by faith has been in our services more than once. But I guarantee you nobody knows he's a Catholic priest because he'll come in blue jeans and a t-shirt. Or walking shorts and a t-shirt. But he's actually been in our services at Ravenswood several occasions. Become a member of the Roman Catholic Church by being born into it or by expressing your allegiance to the church. Roman Catholics teach baptism by sprinkling of all infants born to Catholics. Okay? And we've had this as an issue. We've had folks that were saved, but their parents weren't saved. And so we have baby dedications in our church. And the Catholic grandparents will come to the baby dedication. And so upset because the babies aren't baptized during that. And they believe it's the baptism that protects them from hell. And so they don't believe they're protected. And we've had a couple fuss even during the service over that. Your grandmother's still devout Roman Catholic, is she not? I thought that. Yeah. It's been an interesting experience. Or we've had situations where, and more than one situation, where the one part of the marriage is Baptist and saved and the other part's Catholic. And I can't tell you how many interesting discussions I've been in with all that. Well, most Catholics teach that this baptism plays a role in salvation. They teach that there are six other ordinances, including communion, and they all play a role in salvation. They all play a role in salvation. One of the teachings, for example, is that your wedding, having a Catholic wedding, is part of being saved. So I've seen situations where a non-Catholic would be courting a Catholic and want to get married, and the parents would say, "You have my permission if you get married in the Catholic Church," because they believe that's part of salvation. And we've done weddings for folks where the parents were fine and parents weren't Catholic, but Catholic family would come in and they'd be so upset because you're having a wedding in a Baptist church and that's, you're keeping these people from salvation. Catholics usually call them sacraments instead of ordinances. Roman Catholicism teaches only those ordained by the church can be considered priests. Only those ordained by the church can be considered priests. And that others must approach the Lord through these ordained priests. Through these ordained priests. One time I was going to see somebody as a new convert, and he was excited about being saved. His wife had not gotten saved. And so she knew I was coming over, so she called the priest to get the priest to come over at the same time, hoping the priest could talk him out of. It was an interesting conversation, can I say? But I mean, he'd give the Catholic version, and I'd give the Bible version, and then he'd give the Catholic version, and I'd give the Bible version. I have on occasion been asked to share a funeral with a Catholic priest. And I had one man saved that the family just had a Catholic funeral and a Baptist funeral because half his family was Catholic and half was Baptist. So they had separate funerals. I preached the Baptist funeral. And sharing a funeral with a priest is not a fun idea. So he just got up and preached Catholic salvation and I got up and preached Bible salvation right afterwards. And I could imagine anybody that was confused in the deal. They do not teach soul liberty, teaching instead that only the church can interpret Scripture. Only the church can interpret Scripture. In the past, and still in some parts of the world, Roman Catholicism has opposed the idea of individual Catholics owning Bibles. They don't oppose individuals owning Bibles in the United States today. What do you think that is? Can't get away with it. People in the United States are too used to being free. And if you told Catholics today you can't own a Bible, they'd lose more. Okay? They're already losing a significant percentage. They'd lose more if they told people you can't have Bibles. So today they're all for Bibles, as long as they're Catholic Bibles. But in the past, even in the United States, they'd tell you it was a sin to own a Bible. You would get years in purgatory for owning a Bible. And the justification for it would be that if everybody reads the Bible, you're not trained how to understand it, you'll just misinterpret it and come up with all kinds of wild ideas. So, you know, we don't want to put the Bible in front of people and have them misled. The ordained, set apart, trained Roman Catholic propagandists are the only ones who are supposed to be reading the Bible. Now, that's still the teaching in many countries today. Many countries today that are almost completely Roman Catholic, this was true in the Philippines not long ago. Again, in the Philippines, the Catholic Church is having to back up because 1940s, the Philippines, leaving out the Muslims in Mindanao, the Philippines was 98% Catholic. That number has dropped to 78%. So, I mean, that's a huge drop, and they have to be careful what they do to make it for fear of making it any worse. When Baptist missionaries first went to the Philippines in the 40s, and that was the first thing you did, go into a town, pass out Bibles, and the church would try and stop it. They didn't want people to have a Bible. Again, they can't pull that in the Philippines today. But when they could, they did. And you'll still find that. I was preaching in, this is terrible, I can't remember where. I go to the Philippines every year, 15 years, and I just go there and people drive me when they set my schedule and take me places. And actually, Ed Ray's parents set all that up for me. But I'm not even sure what town I was in now. But we were outside Manila several hours, and the church was on a hill and sort of a steep walk up. And we're having service, and they promote it to everybody. And there's two nuns at the bottom making sure that any of the kids that go to the Catholic school know they're going to be damned to hell if they go to that service. And they're just in your face telling you. I'll never forget two teenage girls. They walk up, the nuns get in their face, and just, you know, so they turn around and leave. But they go around, come up the other side where there's not a path, but still a hill. And they come up the hill on the other side and come to the service. And they both got saved. But and when they left, they left going down the hill without any path. What they did in terms of the nuns and all after that, I don't know. I hope they went and told them. But what they did, I don't know. It's salvation by works. It's just the opposite of all the Baptist distinctives. Throughout history, Roman Catholicism has stood as the ultimate opponent of separation of church and state. Ultimate opponent of separation of church and state. If you hear any of the Muslim leaders and the radical Muslim leaders, they will say it's hypocritical for Christians to oppose terrorism. They said, you Christians have been killing our people for centuries. And of course, our response is, we haven't killed any Muslims. There's no record of Baptists killing. They're not talking about Baptists. When they say Christian, you know what they mean? Roman Catholic. Roman Catholic. And it is true. There have been times and places where Roman Catholicism mercilessly slaughtered Muslims. And we had a young lady in our church for several years from Bosnia, got saved out of Islam. And as a five-year-old, she had got trapped in the three-way civil war in Bosnia, Serbia, Croatia. And she had seen Muslims pull Christians out of their homes out in the street and shoot them. But she'd also seen Roman Catholics pull Muslims out in the street and shoot them. And what grabbed her soul about all this, she got here, waves of immigrants to Chicago, and the mosque she was attending here, the Bosnian mosque in Chicago that she was attending, violence was being preached. And she wanted part of violence. She didn't want to see anybody drug out in the street and shot. And so she begins very confused. Who do you trust? Because she had seen Muslims do that to Catholics, and she'd seen Catholics do that to Muslims. So when she made her decision to leave the mosque, she didn't know what to do or where to go. See, most of us don't think in those terms. We think in terms of the Muslim terrorists, and we know they're killing folks and all that. And because we never do anything like that. Just because Baptists believe in separation of church and state, we do not persecute people. We do not use violence. How could we? Since we have no deal with the state, if we didn't like this church over here and we wanted to go kill the people, and so we all marched over there after the service to commit violence against them, what would happen? State would come get us. We'd be done. You have to have a deal with the state to be violent as a group and get away with it. We have no deals with the state. Consequently, we never do anything like that. And so we hear those folks talking about how terrible Christians are, and the response is they're lying. Well, they're not lying. They have misunderstood. It's not all Christians. In fact, I don't know very many Christian groups that have a record of any kind of violence. But Roman Catholicism really does. It's been forgotten now again. Evangelical churches have spread, and some of them become so large. In Mexico, back in the 50s and 60s, they were killing the early Baptist preachers that would go into villages in Mexico. And as the years have gone on, Baptists have become, and others have become, Pentecostals, become more and more numerous in Mexico. You don't hear that kind of thing now. But in the early days, a number of Baptist preachers got killed. And I spoke in 2000, large Baptist assembly in Mexico. Most moving part of the week, they brought up some women, elderly women, whose husbands had been killed 40 and 50 years ago for bringing the gospel to Mexico. And they brought their widows up, had the widows give their testimony. I mean, try explaining to them that we were ever Catholic, you know, like some folks say. You won't ever convince them of that. And they were elderly, but their memories of all that was still very fresh. Again, there are people who do things every day that we would consider heroic if we did them once. And they live that way. Well, that Roman Catholicism has stood as the ultimate opponent, separates church and state. The bloody history of Western civilization from the 6th century through the 18th century is basically the story of Catholic struggle for control of individual governments. Even today, Roman Catholicism has a tremendous impact on the governments of several countries. For example, if you wanted to be a missionary to Italy or to Spain today or to Portugal, they will let American preachers come to those countries. So you can't have a church building. Roman Catholic Church says they don't want people seeing, if they see a church building, they might go in. Okay? So you can't have a church building. You're meeting in a living room, or you're just, but you cannot have a church building because of the influence of the Catholic Church. Let's take a 10-minute break.